Welcome back to Start Kyle Orton. I'm Travis. With me, as always, is Kyle. Kyle, we came out of this week, and I think the both of us were feeling pretty good. End of the game, we were like, Bears didn't win, but you know what? A lot of bright spots. I don't feel depressed. Like, you know, we've got some stuff to work forward towards, but, you know, Caleb looked good. We were very positive. This week has not been a positive week for most Bears fans, has it?
It's such an uncomfortable position for us to be the voices of reason, the voices of calm.
The calm, at least, yeah.
I watched that game, and again, even more than the Texans game, a lot more tangible. Caleb Williams didn't just show signs of life. He, in the second half of that game especially, was doing some very impressive shit. And again, I think we are both of the, you know, you and I are coming at it from a little different perspective. You obviously, like, you want competitive football. You want to see the Bears make the playoffs this year. I have always said making the playoffs is a stretch goal for me. I want Caleb Williams to give me hope that he is the franchise quarterback. But I think you, those are also a parallel. I think you and I both have the, like, yes, they're 1-2. But I think you and I both kind of have this feeling that, like, if he's the guy, if he is a guy, if you have a quarterback, like, whenever it clicks, you can go on a run regardless of who the opponent is.
Yeah.
And so, like, both of those goals are furthered by Caleb Williams' development, even if it's a little choppy right now. And I think, I don't know if I said this on the podcast, I always felt like, I didn't feel like the expectations for this offense were too unreasonable. I know everybody's gone there. Everybody's like, this is a disaster. It's the same goddamn Bears offense I've been watching my whole life. We were sold a bill of goods, blah, blah, blah. Fire the coaches, fire this, fire that. And, you know, I think there's some coaching staff stuff. I mean, we weren't happy with them keeping Matt Eberflus in the first place. We won't pretend that we were. Y'all can go back and listen to it. I don't think Matt Eberflus is the guy. I think, if you ask me right now what I think happens, I think Caleb Williams clicks. This team goes on a nice little run down the stretch this season. Matt Eberflus keeps his job just to lose it at the end of next year. Because I think after two years of Caleb Williams, I think this organization will look around and be like, well, we've got the quarterback. Kind of seems like our coach sucks. So
Eberflus is such a weird situation, right? Because I feel like at the same time he is being, like, bad-mouthed way too much, but also I still think he should be fired.
It's a case where we talked all the time about how, not on this podcast, was we didn't have it during that era, and much to everyone's chagrin, because the people were crying for our voices in that wilderness. During the Matt Nagy era, we kept saying how Matt Nagy, the offensive coordinator, was going to get Matt Nagy, the head coach, fired.
Yeah.
Matt Eberflus, the head coach, could very well still get Matt Eberflus, the defensive coordinator, fired. Because his side of the ball, things looked good. I know they gave up 21 points despite Anthony Richardson looking like, you know, hot buttered ass. But there were some short fields in there. There were some turnovers. His defenses still look good through three games. I have been impressed with how he's kind of adjusted to his scheme. I mean, he's playing a lot less cover two this year. There's a lot of different coverages they're mixing in. He's sending blitzes. Still not, I mean, he's not Brian Flores and never will be, but he's sending blitzes a lot more often. Mm-hmm. Than he used to. I mean, I've been impressed with the job that he's done as a defensive coordinator. As a head coach, so many questions are coming around. What is with the personnel usage in so many cases on both sides of the ball? And why are you sticking to these rotations? And why are you doing this? And why are you, if Shane Waldron's the one that wants to run the diamond slot formation with Gerald Everett, blah, why are you letting him? Why are you doing, why, when you scored a touchdown, why did you have to take a timeout to decide to go for two? Why didn't everyone on the field know if we score here, we're going for two? How was that not already taken care of?
What the delayed reaction on that 2-point conversion where everybody else held up the one, and then he was like, no, two. Like, obviously you go for two, but he didn't communicate it.
Yeah, that's something that is the head coach's job. When that drive is happening, when you get into the red zone, you're supposed to click into the goddamn radio on your belt and be like, all right, guys, if we score here, get the, you know, we're going for two.
Even if the math is obvious to you, and I do think one of the things that Flus is actually good at is making these good statistical decisions, right?
That's the funny thing about Eberflus is in terms of like fourth down decisions and everything.
Mm-hmm.
The analytics love the guy. People don't believe that. They you know, we all want to believe this is just the next Lovie Smith, conservative, blah, blah. He's actually statistically aggressive, but
yeah.
I think Matt Eberflus kind of furthers the what I keep calling the central problem of the Ryan Poles era is that they have the big ideas correct, I think. I think they mostly understand what a modern NFL franchise looks like. I think they mostly understand what kind of team you need to be. The execution, the macro is good, but the execution at the micro level is often botched horribly. You need a guard. That's great. Invest in a guard. Why did you pick Nate Davis, the one that his own coach in Tennessee hated, only to find out that, yeah, this motherfucker doesn't like to practice? You needed the Chase Claypool trade. In theory, much like with the Montez Sweat trade, I've got no problem with saying, look, this draft class is weak in wide receiver. We have nothing at wide receiver. This is a young wide receiver that just needs a new contract. This is the perfect window to let's trade a two for that. That idea on a macro level, I get. On a micro level, the guy you chose to bet on was Chase Claypool, a malcontent from an organization that has a history of making malcontents work better than any other org in football. And they're giving up on this guy.
Yeah.
So in theory, I love the idea of getting a three down running back who can catch the ball and be an outlet for your quarterback. You know, it would be awesome if you had added, you know, a Saquon Barkley type, but you know, on the micro level, you didn't get Saquon Barkley. You chose DeAndre Swift, a guy who, again, if you were as analytically minded, and that Ryan Poles' approach to analytics also continues to befuddle me, because this is a man we saw on Hard Knocks reference wins above average and stuff. So and talk about the value of analytics so much. So I know he looks at some analytics, but if you're looking at some analytics, why aren't you looking at things with DeAndre Swift like rushing yards over expected, which for me was the most terrifying thing I've ever seen when that Swift signing happened. I was like, this guy was behind two of the best offensive lines in football in Detroit and Philadelphia and had negative rushing yards over expectation. That shouldn't be possible unless, as we have seen now through three games in Chicago, the kid is blind as a fucking bat. He doesn't see holes. He doesn't trust the play design. He doesn't
Yeah. He lacks the most important trait of any running back, which is spatial awareness. He doesn't know where anybody else is on the field, and that includes his blockers. It includes the defenders. And he takes it like he's playing a video game, and he's like, I better bounce it outside immediately.
Yeah. DeAndre Swift should play more Madden, because what I've learned playing Madden is that if you slam the sprint button down the minute the ball is snapped, you're going to get tackled for a loss, buddy. The game wants you to hit the hole and then sprint. They're trying to teach you how this
works.
Wait
for your blockers.
Wait for your blockers. DeAndre Swift, terrible at NCAA 25, confirmed. A lot of sympathy there. I'm so fucking bad at that game.
Before we get on to Swift.
Yeah, where did this even start? Where did this rant start? Because I got going. Matt Eberflus.
With Eberflus. Right. With Eberflus, to me, he reminds me of like a Vinny Del Negro. Do you remember Vinny Del Negro, Kyle?
I do remember him as the Bulls coach before the good coach, right?
That's right. Secret. Vinny Del Negro, good guy, nice guy. Everybody liked him, right? He was very good at bringing up young players, very liked by young guys, very good at development, right? For that reason, he kept the locker room together. He made a nice organization. But when you get to that point, when it comes down to brass tacks, you say, oh, he's just a mediocre coach, though. Like, he's just mediocre. We can't actually go anywhere with this guy, and we have to move on from him.
Yeah,
you can't get stuck in the Marvin Lewis paradox, right?
Yeah.
You have to move on, and the Bears are in that spot right now.
Yeah, someone in my mentions on Twitter, and I know that person listens to this podcast, and so whoever you are, I'm very sorry. I should remember who you are that said this, but it did make me laugh. They referred to him as Eber Renteria, which is the same thing. Ricky Renteria, same kind of thing. He was the guy that you brought in to babysit your roster until it was ready to play big boy games, and then you usher him out the door. And I think the frustration is that we felt like last offseason was the time to actually do that. And now. I kind of want them to win enough games this year that they don't fire Eberflus this year, because I want that continuity for Caleb for one more year, because I don't like the history of changing offensive coordinators and stuff on a kid after just one year. After 2 years, I consider most guys to be pretty well set and more than ready to change if they need to. But again, that's still ahead of us. And this whole thing actually started with us being optimistic. I don't think we need to. I know it's the mood.
Let's get the negatives out of the way. Let's get the negatives out of the way, right?
I know it's the vibe. We are not quite to fire everybody. I do think Chris Morgan's probably very close to being the sacrificial in-season firing to show that
it's not even
business.
Is it sacrificial at this point?
No, like, I mean, they're serious.
When I think of a sacrificial firing, I think of when the Falcons fired their offensive coordinator when their offense was doing amazing and their defense was the worst in the league.
Yeah,
like,
when Dan
that's
Quinn
a sacrificial firing.
When Dan Quinn fired Dirk Cotter? They were scoring like 29 points a game.
And everybody was like, what are you, like, why are they letting you do this? Yeah, it's obvious that the head coach is the problem. This would be a righteous firing.
Right. I mean, that kind of lays on Matt Eberflus's feet too, I think. Because like, why was Chris Morgan retained? Why was he a forced marriage with Shane Waldron? Like, why didn't Shane Waldron get to bring his own offensive line coach? That's very weird to me. I definitely think if they lose this game against the Rams and at 1-3, you know, the bloodlust will be as high as it can get. I think that's when you see that kind of move come, just to to throw the fans something, to be like, look, we're taking this seriously. We are not content with how things are going. But yeah, I don't think we're there yet in firing everybody. And again, I think, and it's normal for Bears fans, because we have done this our whole lives, where we look at the schedule and it's like, we can probably beat this team, but not this team. So we need to bank. We can't lose any of the games that I'm looking at right now that feel winnable to me, because we know we're not going to win the games that don't currently feel winnable to me.
As the season has progressed, we've added games that feel less winnable, right? Like,
right,
before the
right.
season, we thought, ooh, those Viking games will be competitive in. Now it's looking like we're going to get our asses kicked twice by Minnesota. Right.
The Commanders look tougher than expected. The Panthers now with the Red Rock. I get everyone's freaking out. They're looking ahead. But here's the thing. That kind of math changes if you have a quarterback.
Right.
We've never been in that position, so I understand why we're not used to thinking that way. But the fact of the matter is, this was like Sunday against the Colts is a game that I think they lost that they should have won, but it was a game that they lost because of a lot of dysfunction on the offense, a lot of stuff, a lot of growing pains still. But I think it pays off down the road when they will win. And I'm not one to make bold predictions on this podcast, but they will win at least one game this year down the stretch that right now you're looking at and you don't think they're going to win. Because
absolutely,
I saw Caleb Williams again make huge strides in the second half of that game. And again, we've talked about this. It would be more comforting right now if the Bears, to a lot of people, if the Bears were doing what the Commanders are doing with Jaden Daniels, where I feel like, and this is not to knock Jaden Daniels. I know everyone's like, oh, what do you say about Jaden Daniels now, you hater? To which I would like to say, my Jaden Daniels comp was Marcus Mariota, guys. I didn't say he was Ryan Leaf. I didn't say he was Jamarcus Russell. I said he was Marcus Mariota. Does anyone remember Marcus Mariota's rookie year? It was not exactly a disaster either. It was pretty darn good. All my questions there were about ceiling versus floor. But anyways, the Bears, it would be more comforting mentally to a lot of people I know if Caleb had the glistening stats that Jaden Daniels has right now, because what Washington is doing, and I don't think this is not smart on their part either. What Washington is doing is building an offense right now that plays to the strengths of Jaden Daniels and who he is right now. It's maximizing everything that he does really well right now, and that is RPO, that is quick game, that is QB run, and that is design shot plays down the field. The Bears are not doing that. They are calling an offense for who they want Caleb Williams to be. He's coming to the line. He is setting protections. He's checking into plays. He's reading things out And he's not always guessing right. He's guessing right more often than he's guessing wrong, but he's learning to do all this on the fly. They are asking him to make real big boy throws. They are asking this game especially. We saw him finally start to go over the middle a lot. We saw him start to hit a couple deep balls. You know, the accuracy still wasn't 100% what you wanted, but he hit a couple, and I think that confidence will build from that. And I think when this thing clicks, and as disjointed as it is, as much of a mess as it's been, I do think it clicks. I think Shane Waldron, you saw him this week start to really course correct on some of the personnel choice decisions he'd made. You saw a lot less Gerald Everett. You saw a lot more Cole Kmet. You saw a lot fewer targets go to DeAndre Carter. You saw more targets go to Rome Odunze. You still saw too much DeAndre Swift. I would expect next week we will, or this week we will see even less DeAndre Swift. You saw more.
We definitely started to see a shift, right, towards Roshan, especially in the second half, until the Bears were in a position where they were essentially in need of a third down back on every play.
Yeah, who can
catch Roshan was clearly the top choice there in the second half.
So, you see the personnel usage shift. I think, you know, they made the choice to just pull the plug on Nate Davis and throw Matt Pryor in there. I thought he played okay. I don't think he's as physically talented as Nate Davis. But I think he made fewer mental mistakes, and that's what's been killing them. And that's also as hard as it is to believe it right now, that's why it also feels correctable. There are so many things that just missed, that just didn't get one block right, that just didn't get this check, that were just outside of this guy's fingertips. It's not cascading disasters every play. The talent level, I think, is still what we thought it was in June. But I was a little nervous about September with this offense. I thought things might start a little slow because we were worried about the interior of the offensive line. And when you have the interior of a weak interior of the offensive line, it does make running the ball really hard. It does make deep play action. It makes deep passing very hard. About the only thing that you can do in response to the kind of pressure that they've had on the offensive line is just spam the hell out of quick game concepts. And that's tough to ask a rookie quarterback to do from the beginning, to ask him to diagnose everything and get the ball out quick. That's tough. You don't ask him to do that starting with week one. But you saw them start to do that in week two. And then you saw this week, they really, especially in the second half, when they realized the run game still wasn't going anywhere, they just kind of put everything in Caleb's hands and let him do it. And you see his comfort growing along as they do that. And I think ultimately they will be the better for it. Because I do think they'll start to, you know, they're going to switch up their usage on the backs a little bit, I think. They'll run the ball a little bit more effectively. And I think the trust that they've already put in Caleb and the stuff he's had to shoulder already will pay off very quickly with a more consistent passing game.
Yeah. So along those lines, one of the things that I've seen a lot is a lot of hatred towards Shane Waldron here over the first three games. Like, a ton of people are just ready to be like, Shane Waldron needs to be fired. This is the worst hiring. You know, our offensive coordinator always sucks. Just, you know, the usual Bears fan stuff. And to that, I say this. I had to listen to Bears fans for the last just about 7 years tell me about how we should be running an offense around our quarterback. We should only be doing what Mitch Trubisky does well. We should only be doing what Justin Fields does well. Why aren't you running play action? Why aren't you always doing the two plays that these guys are good at so that they can always succeed? Why aren't you, you know, babying them through the system instead of throwing too much at them when they're not good at it? Waldron has come in here, and in the first three games of a rookie's career, he has done these things. He has gone out and he has said, what do I have that's going to get Caleb Williams easy throws? Well, I have DJ Moore, the king of yak, so I'm going to throw these quick little out passes to him. Some of those haven't worked, you know, and now we're getting stuck at second and nine. He said, what's a rookie quarterback's best friend? How about handing the ball off and getting a chunk of yards? Well, DeAndre Swift can't gain any yards. Right. He's been trying to help Caleb along, put him in situations where he's got nice passing opportunities. And it's just not happening. You know, the parts of the offense that should be easy, that should be a simple 4 yards or a simple 5 yards every once in a while, are instead getting us at best 1 yard. And then Caleb has to go out there and make some magic. Right. What we saw halfway through this game is, like you said, Waldron just adjusting to this. He was like, fine, man, we're 2.5 games deep. The only plays that are working in this playbook are the ones where I just give Caleb a goddamn regular play. He sets the protection, and then he takes care of that play. None of this pre-prescribed bullshit. All of those plays are going nowhere. All of my runs to DeAndre Swift are going nowhere. We just have to let him run the offense. And then, yeah, like you said, Gerald Everett wasn't on the field, right? Cole Kmet is out there as his safety blanket. All these plays are going towards Rome Odunze instead of fucking DeAndre Carter. Lo and behold, the Bears suddenly have an offense. And it felt, I got to tell you guys, I feel like everybody's forgetting at the end of that game, if the Bears got one more stop on Jonathan Taylor, that whole stadium was quiet, thinking, holy shit, if they get the ball back to this kid, we're going to lose the game, aren't we?
I mean,
like, he's walking down the field now.
If Mercedes Lewis, the 39-year-old blocking tight end, who was brought in just to be a blocking tight end, didn't blow another block on Max Protect,
yeah,
that drive could have been the one to do it.
There were three fucking blockers on Leatu Latu on one play. Three. Cole Kmet, Mercedes Lewis, and Braxton Jones. They had one dude on their side. And Latu got around all three of them and still got to Caleb.
Yeah, well, and a lot of people blamed Cole Kmet because he was the last guy there. I didn't blame Cole. Looked to me, like, if you watch the replay, it actually looks like Mercedes Lewis pushes Latu around Cole. It was like, oh no. Like,
Braxton Jones is sitting there like, I have nobody to block. If anything, you need to push his ass inside and send him to the actual tackle.
Yeah, no, but I think Caleb is coming along. The clean pocket stats were very good in this game. And it didn't feel like it early on, but the pass blocking overall, it really was better, which it should have been. The Colts front was weaker. And the Rams front is weaker than, you know, the Texans and Titans. I think they can do some stuff, hopefully, against the Rams. You know, I won't say I'm not worried about this game against the Rams, because you're talking about Sean McVay, one of the three best head coaches right now, four best coaches right now in the NFL. I absolutely can coach circles around Matt Eberflus. At the same time, their defense has been struggling. I do think the Bears offense, this can still be a game where they get it going. September football is always, it's fucking weird, guys. It is.
I mean, look at what happened this week, right? Look at the Broncos shellacking the Bucks. Like, why did that happen? What the fuck was that? The Rams coming back, beating the 49ers for no discernible reason.
The Saints going from surprising world beaters in weeks 1 and 2 to just an abysmal performance against the Eagles in week 3. I mean, it's a week-to-week league. You probably won't be thinking, you know, there are all these, oh, God, they look like this. So they look like this week 3, so they're going to look like this week 4, week 5, week 6. You don't know. And it's one of these things that I don't think is going to necessarily be up and down all season. Like I said, when it clicks, and I can't promise it's going to click this week. I'd like to believe it is. I think there's a good reason to believe it is. But when it clicks, it will click. And I think it will be more consistent than not that they are good. And the recipe's there. I think we get Keenan Allen back pretty soon, hopefully. I think you see Rome Odunze coming along. You see Caleb coming along. They're getting Kmet involved more. They're drifting in the right direction on offense. The defense should stay a constant, in my opinion. I don't mean to, and I'm not trying to tell you guys not to be mad. I'm not, like, there are hard questions to ask of this coaching staff, 100%. Like, the coaching job has mostly been unacceptable. At the same time, you know, with Shane Waldron, like you said, there are like four or five guys, I think. You know, Sean McVay's one, Kyle Shanahan's the other, Andy Reid, Matt LaFleur. These seem to be like the only, Kevin O'Connell, these seem to be like the only guys where it's like, this offensive line looks terrible, but somehow they're doing it. They're scheming around it. Those guys are head coaches for a reason. If you get those guys that, you know, if you get those guys that can call up good plays and scheme around a bad offensive line and do this and that, you know, there's only so many of those guys to go around. I think Shane Waldron, I don't think he became an idiot overnight. I do like a lot of what he did in Seattle. But when you can't run the ball when you're afraid, literally afraid to run the ball because you're worried about running not only being a slight positive, you're worried about being like a fucking negative.
Mm-hmm. Losing 13 yards on fourth and one.
And you don't trust, and then you don't trust your pass protection either. That leads to stuff that looks stupid when it doesn't work. The wide receiver screen looks like a nice safe play when it gains 4 yards. Looks like the dumbest fucking play call I've ever seen when it loses 4 yards. Like that's, mm-hmm. but those are that's not something that he's running because that's his favorite goddamn play. I don't believe this man is John Shoup. I don't believe he's Gary Crowton. I don't think he goes to sleep at night dreaming of throwing bubbles. There are just not a lot of workable solutions for an interior offensive line that's not doing its job. So you get play calls that look bad. But I think this offensive line, fits and starts, got a little better this week. I think it can get a little better next week. And maybe, you know, like I said, you use Swift a little less, you use Roshan a little more, you'll use Herbert a little more, just forward progress, then you don't have to call those bubbles so much. Then you're a little less afraid to just run true drop. When it's second and four, you're a little less afraid to run true drop back than when it's second and 14 and the defense knows you're going to pass and is already throwing the kitchen sink at Caleb.
Yeah. Now, I will say one thing. You mentioned getting more positive yards. Tiki Barber brought this up during the podcast. We talked about this earlier today. I have to have this rant like once a year.
Do it.
Tiki mentioned that, you know, I think he said, statistically, I just don't think this is workable, essentially, in that the Bears seem to be attempting to get to third and short, to get an easy third down. And what he was trying to say was, if you keep trying to get to third down, you will inevitably fail that third down. And Kyle, I was talking to you earlier today. The best team in the NFL last year at converting third downs, number one in the league, was the Buffalo Bills. They converted a little over 49% of their third downs. What that means, in a nutshell, is that the best team in the NFL at converting third downs does it less than half the fucking time, which means you have a worse than a coin flip shot at converting any third down, just overall, in the NFL. Your goal should never be to get to third and short. Your goal should be to avoid third down. That's the actual goal. And maybe people have seen this, like I'm not on social media, but sometimes it gets to like Reddit and I see these things. Robert Mays threw out a hilarious stat just in time. Maybe he was inspired by what Tiki had said. The Bears are by far the worst in the league at second down conversions, at getting a first down on second down. They have done it 8 total times this year. They are more than half as bad as the next worst team, the Carolina Panthers, at getting a first down on second down. This is so, Kyle, this is so common for the Bears specifically. It feels like we have been indoctrinated into a cult of just get to third and short, right? We've heard so many offensive coordinators say, well, the goal is to get to third and short, so it's a convertible third down. That's actually not the fucking goal. The goal is to get a first down on first down. The goal is to go from first and 10 to first and 10. Maybe second and 7 to first and 10, right? But every time a Bears offensive coordinator gets to second and 7, it feels like what they're thinking is, well, what if I get 5 yards on this play? Wouldn't that be beautiful? If I got 5 yards, then it's only third and 2. And now you're entering that realm of a coin flip. And if you don't make it, you're punting. And stacking these events one after the other in the way you would have to matriculate the ball down the field. And this is essentially the point that Tiki was trying to make, was that he said that every time you try to convert another third down on a drive, the probability of it gets worse. Not exactly how probability works, but I understand what he's trying to say, which is you can't depend on 4 or 5 at worst third down conversions on one drive. You just can't. Average NFL team is probably about 33 to 35% conversion rate on third down overall. If you just keep multiplying that shit, oh, I have to get 4 third down conversions on this drive and I'll get a touchdown. It's less than 2% chance that you're going to get this. You're going to get this one out of every 50 drives, man. That can't be your goal. Your goal has to be every single play. This play could get a first down. This play could get a first down. This play could get a first down. And the Bears just seem so content for my entire life to be like, whew, 3rd-and-2, this is a success. And then it's like they get there and then they don't have a play for it. They never have a fucking play to get those 2 yards or those 3 yards just to get to the first down marker. And then, oops, sorry, that's another drive we're gonna throw back in the fucking fishing hole. And it's just, I'm hoping that Shane Waldron isn't that same kind of guy where he's thinking, well, God, I just hope we're in third and manageable, because I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt here, because I do think his goal right now is to bring Caleb along, is to get Caleb ready for the rest of the season.
Yeah, and I'm not super concerned that that's Waldron's mentality, because he was very high when he was in Seattle in terms of early down pass rate, first and second down, right. How often he passed. He was well above expectation in that, which is usually indicative not of the mindset you're talking about, but of the mindset that you're saying you want, which is, you know, the best way to avoid third down is to just not have third down. Yours to convert third down is just not have a third down. And even this year, they rank fairly high in terms of first and second down pass rate over expected. Now, some of that has been because of how often they've been trailing. Some of that is a little distorted by how many of those first and second down pass plays have been those bubble screens that everyone's pissed off about. But yeah, I think that'll be less of a problem as they gain more trust. I think he's really been, Waldron's been torn every which way between two kind of contradictory goals where, you know, it's almost counterproductive, but he's trying so hard not to put too much on Caleb's plate. And right now, the only way to avoid putting too much on Caleb's plate in terms of, to me, what's too much is asking him to face a lot of third and longs. The only way to avoid that right now is to put more on his plate in terms of throwing on first and second down and, like, truly throwing, not screens, true drop back pass on first. It seems counterintuitive, but when you don't have a functional run game, you just on first and 10, you call drop back pass and you trust Caleb that if it's not there, he'll check down. And then boom, there's your 2nd-and-7. There's your 2nd-and-6 as your fallback, not as your goal, but as your fallback. So I think that'll even out over time too. I don't want to sound like a homer. I would hope the people that have listened to the Scodcast long enough know.
Yeah.
That, like, blowing smoke up your asses is not what we do. We aren't
going to shill for the fucking Bears.
No, that's not what we're doing. But like, I do think so much of this is just, it's going to normalize a little bit. Like, this is the personnel usage got better. They had almost 400 yards of offense. Caleb isn't missing quite as many of the throws that he was missing a couple weeks ago. Like, it's trending up. People feel so much better. And here's where I will say something awful about Shane Waldron. That fucking sprint option was terrible.
That was a horrible idea.
Getting that play call in, so because Caleb confirmed he did have, I was wondering at first if Caleb had the option to check out of that play. Caleb confirmed that he did, but by the time they basically got lined up for it, there wasn't a lot of time left on the play clock, and he was worried that if he audibled, they wouldn't have time to adjust, so he just kind of ran it. That was awful, but at the same time, that play is a symptom of the broken brain that comes from not just trusting your regular running game. You know, that whole sequence of events, Shane can take some shit for that, because I don't know why you're running it 4 straight times. If you are running it 4 straight times, I don't know why you're running it 4 straight times with fucking DeAndre Swift. Just get Roshan in there, who had converted a 4th-and-1 earlier on that drive to get you there in the first place. Give the ball to that guy in short yardage. You know, I would have liked to have seen it. When the next time they got in the red zone, you notice they did, in fact, go play action, get the touchdown pass. Caleb to Rome. They didn't repeat the failure. So I do think Shane is also learning a little bit from his mistakes too. You know, and I guess since we're talking about learning from his mistakes too, I don't want to pretend that was a flawless performance by Caleb Williams. He learned a very important life lesson. I lost my mind a little bit. There was some ranting in a Twitter DM. Some people were very concerned about my blood pressure. Nothing pisses me off more than when a guy throws late to the flat in the NFL. It's an interception. 99% of the time, and when it's not, it's because the guy dropped the interception. Nothing good has ever come from throwing late to the fucking flat in the NFL. I lost my damn mind when it happened. At the same time, I feel like every one of your favorites has thrown that exact interception when they were a rookie. Every one of them has to learn that life lesson the hard way, because in college, they're all used to the windows not closing that fast, and they're all used to their arm letting them get away with that throw. And Caleb especially is used to getting away with that throw. And so far, I really haven't seen Caleb, other than in terms of just, you know, a couple misses, haven't seen Caleb make the same mistake twice. I don't think he'll make that one again either. It sucks that that's how he had to learn, but it does seem like they all have to learn that lesson at some time. The second interception, I'll say this to Matt Eberflus too, since we're fucking, Matt Eberflus was like, that was a risky throw. You got to keep your mind, your situation. Fuck you. Fuck you, you defensive coordinator, milquetoast.
Yeah, that was
you drafted. Pick. You drafted Caleb Williams, and not only did you draft Caleb Williams, you drafted Roma Dunze for that play. And I think Roma Dunze makes that play more often than he doesn't. If Aaron Rodgers throws that ball to Devontae Adams, everyone celebrates. You say that's the difference between the good ones and the great ones. Right, the great ones right there. Caleb hit him in the fucking hands. I want Caleb Williams to make that throw. I want you drafted Caleb Williams to make that throw.
Yeah.
So I ain't mad. I will. And Pro Football Focus agreed. They didn't. They only gave the kid one turnover worthy play. Obviously, it was
And Rome had a fantastic day. He had an amazing day as a receiver. It was like this one. And bad pass.
The defense gets paid too. It was a great play by the defensive back. He got his hand up there right at the. You know that. That interception, we toss that into the football happens pile. Like, you know, sometimes there are things that happen. This is hard for people to calibrate. But
should go in the football. Like, I feel like people are so depressed about this game. Every game the Bears have played this year has been within one score, right? The Bears lost to the Texans by 6. They lost to the Colts by 5. If the Bears are able to ram it in from the 1 on 4th-and-1, if that play call isn't the dumbest play call you've ever seen in your life, the Bears win this game, and suddenly it's fucking sunshine and rainbows, right? This is just two teams playing each other at the beginning of a long season. One of them had to win, and one of them had to lose. We lost at Indianapolis. This is not going to be the worst loss on any team's record this year, man. Like I said, the Bucs came into this week, and they lost at home to the fucking Broncos, who might be the worst team in the NFL, and they got annihilated. The Bucs were 2-0, like... It happens. It's just a football game that happened, man.
Yeah. Well, and it's I understand it from Bears fans' perspective in that, like, I think Bears fans are used to saying, well, there are going to be ups and downs, and then only getting the downs.
Yeah. Yes.
And we haven't really had the ups yet, so I get why it's hard to have faith that it's coming.
Yeah.
And that's why it's fucking weird that I kind of do. Like, I have faith that it's coming.
The problem,
this is a weird spot for us. I promise that you guys, this is a weird spot for us. But I actually, like, I don't have a ton of faith in Matt Eberflus, but I do have faith in Caleb Williams. And, like, if the trajectory of the quarterback is up, the trajectory of the franchise will inevitably go up with it.
So, what it is, I mean, it's, I don't want to sound like a douchebag here. So I'm gonna do this very carefully. What it is you and I look at football often from the perspective of like a person who's analyzing the play, right? Or a player, because we focus on the draft a lot. We think about draft players a lot, how they're going to work out in the NFL. We look at their footwork. We look at where they're throwing the ball. We look at how they're handling themselves for a quarterback. We look at, what are you reading? Where are your eyes? What's your footwork, right? So when we see Caleb play like this, and it doesn't necessarily result in a perfect game, although it does result in a pretty good game for him, and we say, that's a good quarterback who didn't have a perfect day, right? The same way you could watch Pat Mahomes the other night win a game by 3 over the Bengals, in which he threw for 150 yards and a pick and just kind of generally looked miserable, right? But you could see, this is a good quarterback. It didn't happen today. That's fine, right? The results didn't match what he was putting into it. The reason that we are usually so down on the Bears, we were during the Trubisky era, as we were during the Fields era, especially there at the end, especially last year, was when we watched Fields, even when he was succeeding, we were seeing oh, this guy just has the same old shit that he is putting on tape. And it was still a case of the results not meeting what he was putting into it. It was just in reverse. It was a guy who was, you know, dumping four touchdowns on the Broncos, playing the game of his life, but we're like, this is bullshit. It's like, it's this is not repeatable. With Caleb, it's the opposite. Like, he's doing it right. He's playing great. It's just not, we haven't got wins yet.
Yeah, and time will tell. It might just be that I'm giving Caleb, I'm looking at Caleb with rose-colored glasses. I don't think I am, because the consensus from, you know, the tape watchers around the world who do not have a stake in the Bears personally is very similar to what my own belief is. And that hasn't always been the case. I was a lot more rosy about Justin Fields year one and year two than these same guys were. They tried to warn me of the things that I would eventually come to accept myself. We were in alignment on Mitch Trubisky, because I never talked to myself. I couldn't ever get there with Mitch. And when people would be like, I didn't really like the Mitch Trubisky film, even after a good game, I'd be like, damn, you right. You know, that. But yeah, with Justin Fields, you know, I always say I'd get excited. Justin would have a good game. I'd get excited. I'd look at the all 22. And every single time I felt a little bit worse, even if it was a good game, because you'd be like, all right, that scramble was sick. But if he just looked, he had the guy in structure open. Like, there was a throw to be made, and he didn't make it because whatever reason, and then he took off running. You know, Caleb, every single time I've watched the film, I felt better. I've been like, all right, so that's what he was seeing on that one. There really wasn't anyone open on this sack. There really wasn't this. You're not seeing the turndowns. You're not seeing any of that stuff. You know,
could not agree more with you. Like, every time you watch him again, you're like, oh, fuck, he made the right decision on almost like, every single play. Like, there none were a of couple, this is his
there
fault.
There were a couple pressures and sacks early in that game where, you're watching on the broadcast view and you can't see the safeties and you get that sinking feeling in your stomach because you've got the timer going and you're like, in 3.5 seconds, there was really nobody there? Really? Really? And then you watch the All-22 and you're like, fuck, there really wasn't. What the fuck? But you don't blame the kid, you know? And that's, I'm seeing it. The hardest part, it doesn't feel like it because they're making everything look too damn hard right now. But the hardest part for a rookie quarterback is usually the eyes. It's usually it's knowing where to go with the ball. It's figuring out what they're throwing at him. And it's week three and I'm already not concerned about the guy's processor at all. I'm just not. Yeah. And like,
100%.
And that was the ever present concern with the last two guys. You know, Justin mostly saw things, but he saw them late and he would turn them down because he would always second guess himself. Mitch never saw anything at all. And to this day, I think is maybe the stupidest quarterback I've ever seen. So it's just, it looks different to me. And it's hard for me to be too downbeat about everything else because yes, Eberflus might be a dork, but there are Mike McCarthy's in this world who've got Super Bowl rings because of good quarterbacks. You know, there are, and I think if the trajectory of the quarterback is up, and even then, we're not just talking ourselves into Caleb Williams, you know, like you'd talk yourself into Jay Cutler throwing to Johnny Knox and all that. You're putting your faith in Caleb Williams, but you're also putting your faith in Rome Odunze getting a little better each week. You're putting your faith in the fact that DJ Moore is still here. You're putting your faith in the fact that Shane Waldron figured out who Cole Kmet is. You're putting your faith in the fact that it sounds like Keenan Allen should be back either this week or next week. That the infrastructure is there. It's just got to click and it's got to hit, and I feel confident that it's going to soon. And then it's just, it's too damn hard for me to be pessimistic about everything else because that's the key ingredient. And also, I mean, the background of all this is that none of us are concerned about this defense right now. Is anybody really concerned about this defense? It's its thing. Like, they'll have bad days. I didn't think they had a perfect day on Sunday. I thought, you know, your boy Jervon got pushed around a little bit in the run game. I mean, you know, Quentin Nelson and Ryan Kelly are a tough draw, but he was not much of a factor against the run. Jonathan
and the
Taylor
Colts
got his.
The Colts have one of the better running backs in the NFL. He got loose a couple times.
So wasn't their best game, but it also, I mean, they kept them in the game all game long. I expect them to do that almost every single week. So there's that constant there. The foundation's here. It can still click. Now, granted, if they lose to the Rams, I'm not going to come in here and blow smoke up your ass about their playoff hopes. I think if they lose to the Rams, you start to put the playoff hopes on the back burner and you just focus on the Caleb Williams part. But I do think, you know, the Caleb Williams part looks the most promising, and that is and has been the most important thing to me this season. And I think, again, the team that I go back to right now, and nobody wants to be compared to them right now because it fell apart again. The team that I keep thinking of right now when I watch this team is the 2022 Jaguars in Trevor Lawrence's second year. Now, that team was a little fraudulent in that all of the players that they put around Trevor Lawrence in that second year were overpaid veteran free agents that only had a couple good years left in the tank. And now Jacksonville, you can watch, they're left holding the bill. Trevor is behind an offensive line of overpaid corpses. He's got a couple wide receiver three types who are being paid like wide receiver twos or wide receiver ones. But anyways, the 2022 Jaguars, I think they started 1-5 maybe, but it was a very agonizing 1-5. It was like every single loss was one score. They lost an infuriating yep. game because of some red zone. It was one of those things where it's just like, it's frustrating, but you could see that they were close. And then they broke through. Trevor Lawrence in the second half of 2022 was a top five quarterback by basically every metric, went all the way, won a playoff game. That's the kind of vibe that I'm feeling right now when I watch this Bears team, where it's like the ingredients, as hard as it is to see through all the bullshit, and as frustrating as the coaching decisions are, these are one score losses. They are in every game. They're in every game despite blundering in almost every possible way on offense. And there is still talent on this offense, and there is talent in that quarterback. And it's one of those things that, like, when it clicks, it could click in a really big way, not in the way that we're used to a Bears team clicking, where like it clicks and they reel off 4, 5, 6 wins, 21-13. It could click where you have consistent quarterback play, you have a consistent offense, and then you're in every game and you have hope to actually win every game. Even the ones that right now you're looking at, you know, right now you're looking, you're saying there is no fucking way this team's going to beat Minnesota. There's no way this team's going to be competitive against San Francisco, blah, blah, blah. But if it clicks, if they have a quarterback, you can win those games. You might not, but you have a chance.
Mm-hmm.
And we've never had a chance in those games before. And I do believe by the time it gets there, they will. They will.
Yeah, I hope that if you're listening to this podcast and you came in and you were just so depressed about the Bears this week, for whatever reason, I hope that you've taken some hope out of this, because like I really can't stress how different the reaction was from what I expected. Like, Kyle and I got to the end of that game and we were like, you know what? Pretty good. Like, it's too bad Taylor got that first down at the end. You know, I feel like if we stopped him, Caleb would have had like a really nice drive in there. But honestly, he looked really good today. Like, one bad pass, everything else was just like kind of on the money. We'll have to look at the tape, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, overall optimistic. And the doom guys. The absolute doom. And I understand we're getting shit talked by Green Bay out here winning games with fucking Malik Willis. Minnesota fans are over here with Sam Darnold going 3-0. By the way, shout out to me for calling the Sam Darnold apocalypse before it happened. We've got the Lions, who are just always good now, right? And it feels hopeless. Like, the playoffs already feel out of reach because well, not only that, you've got feels you've like got, it feels like we're fourth even if we're good, right?
Yeah, you've got Justin Fields 3-0.
Yep, Justin Fields is 3-0. Jaden Daniels had a great game.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it hurts. It hurts, right?
I get it. The shit's it's yeah.
But listen. Right now, the results are not matching what is actually happening on the field. You're putting in something, you're putting in all the ingredients to bake a cookie, and for some reason it's coming out as meatloaf, and it doesn't make any sense right now, right? It's early in the NFL season, the preseason is worthless, everybody is fucking weird right now. I agree 100% with you, Kyle. To me, this team feels like, holy shit, we have a team that is on the precipice. But Bears fans are so tired. They are so tired of having a team that is allegedly on the precipice that they just can't stand it anymore. And I understand that frustration. Like Eric, the reason Eric isn't on this podcast right now is because Eric has lost all hope. Like, he is in those doldrums,
he's
folks.
There, yeah.
He won't do this again. So I understand what you are going through as Bears fans. And I know you're not necessarily just going to believe me when I say, it's different. Like, this is honestly different, but it is.
And to be clear, I don't think this is a situation where it's just like, oh, stay the course and everything will be fine. There are specific things that I want to see from this coaching staff in response to the struggles they've had, and that I will be pissed if they do not do, and I will want them held accountable if they don't do them. But I think they sort of get it. You saw Shane Waldron trending in the right way in terms of personnel usage. I think you'll see fewer DeAndre Swift carries this week. If you don't, then it's time to start naming names. At that point,
this could change next week. If DeAndre Swift's carries go up, if Gerald Everett comes back, if Nate Davis goes in for Matt Pryor, but this is going to turn.
Yeah, if Matt Eberflus continues to make the dumbest fucking challenges that I've ever seen, if they're not prepared for a two-point, like, I agree, the coaching staff is primarily responsible for where they're at right now, but I still think it can get better than this, no doubt. But yeah, nobody understands more than me, because I mean, I'm on Bears Twitter. I don't know why I'm on Twitter when it's done nothing but erode my mental health. But I understand that it is fucking frustrating when you know it's coming and you have been a Bears fan your whole life, and especially Chicago legacy media, the Sun-Times and the Tribune guys, they live solely to troll their own readers. Like, Mark Potash is out there today with his column like, why can't the Bears do with Justin Fields what Pittsburgh has, blah, blah. I know it's, you're so tired of reading that shit. You're so tired of being a laughingstock. I get it. I think this is the one of the few times I've meant it when I said it, though. I keep the faith right now just for a little bit longer. I do think the talent specifically of Caleb Williams, but also of Roma Dunze, also of Keenan Allen when he comes back, DJ Moore, I think it wins out in the end. I do.
Yeah, I mean, we haven't said it enough in this game, but the reemergence of Cole Kmet as the security blanket we actually wanted for Caleb, the security blanket beyond the first down marker, like, was incredible near the end of this game. And I understand that your Packers friends, your Vikings friends, they're telling you the Colts were in prevent at that point, didn't fucking matter. The game was over. The game was over. That's not what was happening in the game. People talk about the fucking prevent defense. Like, everybody just immediately goes into it in the fourth quarter and they're like, nah, that doesn't, the fourth quarter doesn't matter. Like, whatever, blah, 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 blah. That is not what was happening here. Caleb was making tight window throws to Cole Kmet. Cole was grabbing everything.
They were still fucking sending blitzes.
They were still. We were playing the game at that point. The Bears were absolutely in the game. They were threatening at the end to win that game if they got a basic run stop.
Of course the Colts weren't in prevent defense, because for God's sakes, if the Bears had stopped Taylor on that last drive, they'd had a chance to win the game.
Yeah, that would have been.
That game was not. Yeah, that game was not ever out of hand at any point to where. Yeah.
Don't listen to them. Enjoy the improvement you saw in the second half of this game.
Yeah.
Enjoy how good Caleb was during this game. Block out these people who are saying, Caleb Williams looked like shit. Like, look at how awesome Jaden Daniels looked. Look at how great everybody else is. Caleb Williams is terrible. Block that shit out. Caleb Williams played an extremely good game here in only his third game in the league. He has only gotten better. There is every reason to be optimistic about him this next week and going forward. I can't believe that we are here, Kyle, saying, be optimistic. Hold on to the rope, Bears fans. It's about to get better. But it's us. Yeah. It has to be us, because nobody else is doing it.
Yeah. Now, I do have some concerns about Sunday, and that this is a game the Bears should win again on paper. But, you know, Sean McVay's a hell of a lot better coach than Matt Eberflus. I do worry, even without Cooper Kupp, even without Puka Nacua, I do, you know, he just beat the fucking 49ers. So I do worry about him pulling some razzle-dazzle and getting the best of Matt Eberflus and putting some touchdowns on the board. I hope Eberflus is up to the challenge. I hope, you know, the Bears mostly just go with a game plan kind of heavy on man that just disrespects Los Angeles's wide receiver group right now, because this Bears secondary should destroy them. But this is a bottom 10 pass rush right now. There will be opportunities and they should win this game. If they don't win this game, we will be mad.
Yeah.
For sure. We're not going to tell not to be mad about that, but there are opportunities here and they're at home.
As far as storylines go, this is Caleb Williams going up against his favorite quarterback, right? His favorite quarterback growing up, Matt Stafford. Like, with all of the pieces could come together right here, have this really nice feel-good moment against the Rams. But I'm not – I don't even feel comfortable predicting this game, because, again, it's just been chaos. this year. Yeah. Like, the Bears could go out here and go off. The Bears could do nothing. I don't know. I don't want to make a prediction on it, but I can tell you Caleb is trending in the right direction. This offense is trending in the right direction. The defense is solid. Don't give up on the Bears at this point, folks. Don't ruin your whole week because the Bears lost by 5 points in an away game in the NFL during a game in which your rookie quarterback had a better game than any fucking rookie quarterback we've ever had on the Bears. Like, don't throw it all away for something that should be optimistic. Yeah. Like, for every single Bears fan, I know you're tired. I think things are about to get better. Why am I being so fucking hopeful? Next week, Kyle, here's the deal. If the Bears suck, we're going to fucking piss off.
Oh, yeah, we're going to come out blazing.
I am going to throw shit at my screen. But I'm going to scream like a monkey.
Yeah. It's tough. Yeah. And I guess I watched the kid throw for 363 yards, man, and I was like, you know, and yardage isn't everything. I get that. I don't want him chucking it 52 times again either, but, like, the previous guy had one 300-yard game. It has one 300-yard in 43 career starts. This guy did it in start three. It's close. It's close, damn it.
Yeah, I mean, do we just leave it there? Like, be optimistic. Let's go into this next game.
Let's hope. If they lay another egg, then we'll just do the reverse of this next week. We'll be so goddamn mad. We'll fire Waldron. We'll fire Fluce. We'll get there.
It's just going to be screaming. Yeah. So, I mean, either look forward to that or look forward to, like, happiness, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, but, I mean, if you get a win, you're 2-2, you're feeling good about Caleb trending back up, then yeah, I think the vibes will be good. So let's hope. God help us. Let's hope the vibes are good next week.
Yeah. All right, buddy. Well, I will see you then.
All right. Way out on that bumper slope. Now you know I'm leaving Chicago. And people I show do hate to go. Now you're leaving.